the Archbishop's sweaty, gape-mouthed face. "That's what nuclear war looks like, Archbishop," he said. "You have to face it. Everyone will die. Everyone you know, everything you've ever seen, will be destroyed. You will die. There's no escaping it. Not even the shelter you're building will save you from it."
How did you do that?"
Overmeyer gasped. "I want you to shut down your nuclear bomb project," Stoner commanded. Glancing at the others, Overmeyer temporized.
"It's not my program. It's the federal government, the president and the Pentagon. I can't shut it down."
"You can tell them that it's evil, and the new morality doesn't sanction it. You can throw the weight of your organization against it."
But we've been backing it."
"Until now," Stoner said, with iron in his voice.
"Yes, until now."
"Stop them," Stoner repeated.
"But the others, the jihadists, the Chinese."
"I'll do what I can to stop them," said Stoner. "But none of them will stop unless you do." Overmeyer looked toward Craig, who was sitting frozen in his chair, staring blankly as if catatonic, then up to Angelique, still standing over him. "Morality is an individual choice," Stoner reminded him. "You have to act, one way or the other. You've just seen what your present course will lead to. You've got to prevent that from happening." Angelique straightened up and reached out a hand to touch Stoner's sleeve.
"And you?" she asked. "Can you really stop the others?"
"I can try," Stoner said. Turning to Tavalera, he added, "And you can help me, Raoul. I'm going to need your help." With that, Stoner disappeared from Archbishop Overmeyer's office. Sister Angelique was emotionally drained and physically exhausted by the time she got back to her own quarters in the New Morality Complex. It was getting dark outside. She had missed lunch, tending to Archbishop Overmeyer after their difficult, challenging meeting with Stoner. The instant that Stoner disappeared from the Archbishop's office, Angelique called in an emergency medical team who took Overmeyer to the complex's gleaming modern hospital. They had wanted to take Bishop Craig, too, but he got up stiffly from the chair he'd been sitting in and insisted he was all right. He instructed Angelique to stay with the Archbishop, then tottered off toward his own office alone, looking lost, dazed. Angelique watched him leave, walking carefully, a trifle unsteadily, as if he had just suffered a concussive blow to the head. "He has," she realized. "We all have." Even Tavalera looked shaken. Angelique called for a security escort to take him back to his apartment. Once the emergency medical team arrived, Angelique went with them and Archbishop Overmeyer to the hospital. The top staff doctors insisted that they be allowed to purge the Archbishop's system of the cholesterol and triglycerides that had built up in his bloodstream. Groggy and shaken though he was, Overmeyer still refused their advice, as he had for years, claiming that he had vowed never to use artificial methods to prolong the span of life that God had planned for him. Angelique dismissed the doctors from the Archbishop's overcooled hospital room, then pleaded with him to accept their help. Overmeyer, sitting up in the hospital bed, pale and perspiring, shook his fleshy face hard enough to make his jowls quiver.
"I'll go when God calls me to him," he said stubbornly.
"But, Your Eminence, don't you realize that these medical advances could be part of God's plan for you?" she insisted, hugging herself against the chill in the room's air.
"All the temptations of Satan," said the Archbishop.
Angelique thought he sounded a trifle pompous.
She urged, "By their fruits you shall know them, Your Eminence. These medical techniques can help you to keep on living, so that you can keep on doing God's work here on earth."
He started to answer, but hesitated.
"The new morality needs your leadership now more than ever," Angelique went on. "The people need you to continue. They look to you for leadership, for inspiration."
"Perhaps," Archbishop Overmeyer murmured. Angelique saw the glimmer in his eyes.
"This man Stoner is presenting us with an enormous challenge," she urged. "No one else has the knowledge, the standing, the piety to deal with him. Do you think that Bishop Craig or any of the other bishops could stand in the Oval Office and tell the President of the United States that the nuclear weapons program must be stopped?"
Overmeyer closed his eyes and muttered a barely discernible, "No, not Craig. He doesn't have the stature. And yet he's the best of the lot."
"You see," Angelique said almost triumphantly, "everything depends on you. And to shoulder the enormous burdens you must carry, you have to be in good physical health."
Overmeyer's many-chinned face sank into something of a pout. "They won't be satisfied with just treating me. They'll want to put me on a diet."
Angelique hid the smile that bubbled up inside her. "That will be your penance, Your Eminence. You can offer it up to God in exchange for his granting you the strength to continue doing his will."
The Archbishop looked sad. "Perhaps you're right," he said, very reluctantly. Angelique stayed with the Archbishop for the rest of the day, while the doctors happily ran him through test after test, poked and prodded him, and finally arranged for a series of injections that would slowly but inexorably reduce the killing chemicals in his cardiovascular system. She left him only after they had returned the Archbishop to his room and presented him with a dinner tray that looked as if it had been prepared for an anemic sparrow. Overmeyer devoured everything on the tray so quickly that Angelique feared he'd start chewing on his napkin. But he settled back in the reclining bed easily enough and soon was snoring. They put a sedative in his drink, she realized. Now, in her own apartment at last, Angelique took off her long-skirted uniform and wormed her arms into the shapeless robe she wore when alone in her quarters. She realized she was famished. As she searched through the kitchenette's half-empty shelves for the makings of a decent dinner, her thoughts turned to Stoner once again. "He's the one with the power," Angelique told herself. "Not the Archbishop, and certainly not Bishop Craig. Craig has ambition, but he doesn't have the strength to seize real power. He's perfectly willing to wait for the Archbishop to die, but he'd never have the guts to push him aside." "Archbishop Overmeyer is a powerful man," she thought. Sick with shock as he was, he still recovered swiftly. In a few days, he'll be stronger than ever. He's been wielding the power of the new morality for almost a generation. He's accustomed to dealing with presidents and senators. He knows how to make them bend to the power of the new morality. And yet Overmeyer was reduced to a pitiful blob of flesh by Stoner. The Star Man. He could make himself emperor of the world if he wanted to. He could make everyone worship him as a god. A wild thought struck her. Stoner could be the second coming. Maybe he truly is. He doesn't have to announce himself as Jesus Christ. He could be God's chosen presence here on earth, come to save us from eternal damnation, come to protect us from the wickedness and the snares of Satan. She smiled to herself as she opened the freezer and slid out a prepackaged meal. Our new Redeemer, come to save us from nuclear holocaust. Angelique thought Stoner wouldn't accept that role. He'd insist that he's only a man, a human being, albeit a man who can control a technology that's so far beyond our own that it seems miraculous. But the people would think of him as our Redeemer, she realized, especially if we led them to think of him that way. Angelique laughed out loud. I'll bet we could even get the Jews to accept him as their Messiah, she said to herself. What's left of them? Kathy. Cairo's airport terminal was jammed with people, all of them talking at once at the top of their lungs. To Kathy, it seemed that most of the noisy, shoving crowd in the terminal were hawkers for some kind of service or trinket, all of them yelling in a cacophony of different languages. Taxi cab, ladies! Jewelry! Genuine gold jewelry! King Tut Hotel, best hotel in Cairo! Antiques from the tombs of the kings! Guided tour through the pyramids! Genuine replica of the Great Sphinx! Mina ignored them all as she turned her little tour group over to a hotel representative. A brown-skinned, pot-bellied male in a dingy white western suit and a pasted-on smile.
The security guards stayed with the tourists all the way out to the hotel bus waiting for them outside the terminal. Once she saw her group safely in the hands of the hotel man,